Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be speaking today about what's been happening in the UA after the biggest rainfall ever.
We're going to be chatting about Taylor Swift and her brand new album, which frankly needs no introduction.
And the Venus Biennale, which is happening right now. What is it? Where is it happening? What's it about? And what's our presence that's going to be there this year?
This is Culture Bites coming to you from the National News. I'm Inas Fang.
I'm Farah Andrews.
And I'm Manjalal.
So,
hi guys.
We're not in a studio.
Hello. Hi.
We aren't together.
Weird thing, we're not in the studio. Yeah, we are not together. We are separate.
So even though we've all come back from Eid, we're still not together because of the weather update. So how are you guys? I want to know because I'm from Abu Dhabi, and obviously Abu Dhabi I don't think was hit as bad as Dubai. How are you guys?
I can speak for myself. I've been very lucky. We haven't had any major damage to the house, but it was a biggie. Hey, I can't believe it's like a week ago today and we're still feeling the repercussions of the storm.
Man, what was it like for you?
Yeah, I was quite lucky. Like, I'm in an apartment and there wasn't damage, but like, I'm near 2nd December Street, which is a really busy part of Dubai, and a lot of those, which is close to Satwa, and a lot of those areas have had a lot of like water on the roads and lots of puddles, and so traffic around my area has been really bad. But I mean, I was sick last week, and so actually on this day last week when the storm happened, I was sick in bed. I had a fever, and I woke up at like 4 or 5, and I saw all these messages, people asking me, "Are you okay? What's going on?" You know, I had relatives from like Iraq messaging me, and I was like, "God, where's travels that I'm sick, that I have the flu?" And then I realized that, hang on, it's not about me. There's actually a disaster happening.
Are you saying that you slept through the worst storm that ever happened in the UAE?
I'm saying that. I was shocked when I was going through it. I'm like, this is happening right now? Because I had my blinds down. I was asleep. I had the worst headache. I had a fever. So I literally slept through it. It's pretty embarrassing.
I was going to say, it must have been... So if you woke up around about 4 and you'd looked out the window... That's a roundabout when it was kind of really kicking off.
Yeah.
It must be quite, like, it was going from like light to dark.
Yes.
The sky went green at one stage. There was a lot of interest. Like, this is very, like, we have solar lights in our garden, and at like 3 p.m., they were all on. Like, oh, okay, it's the middle of the night. No, it's not.
Wow.
It is just pitch black.
And obviously this caused like so much disruption. From where I live, I can see Abu Dhabi Airport. I could not see Abu Dhabi Airport. So I know flights were cancelled, operations were affected completely by everything that was happening. It's just something we've never seen before. It was quite exciting in some ways because never seen anything like it. But obviously my heart goes out to all the people who are still suffering, and hopefully the cleanup operation is well underway.
It does look like they're doing an incredible job. And there's obviously, it's a long operation with these kind of like lakes that have appeared. You can't even call them puddles, they are lakes. But we have friends who have had to move out of their house because the whole of the downstairs is flooded, and they've been, on the scale of things, like, still lucky. They're in a hotel, they're safe, they're good, but their house is not holding up well. And it is at the beginning of this week it was still flooded, so it's a lot.
It's really sad as well, because even if your house hasn't been damaged, which is great, we're still dealing with like repercussions of it. So like, we're all in different places right now, because whether there's road issues or there's big puddles, or we were expecting more rain earlier this week, and so we thought it was going to be worse. So it's kind of still, it's still like, we're still stuck in some kind of, it actually feels a bit like COVID, where we have to stay at home and do work. Like, it feels a little bit like that, but I mean, obviously not as bad.
It felt like that.
So it's just a bit like, okay, yeah.
That was a nail on the head for me. My children were back at home. I was trying to have a job, run the household, homeschool. I know a lot of parents, they were feeling despair last week, because we'd just come back from a 3-week holiday.
Yeah.
Where all the children have been off for 3 weeks, and then we had another week added to it. That's a month now that they haven't been at school.
It's a long time away from school.
It is. You know what's a bit strange as well? Not strange, is that like, it's not like there's one area that a lot of houses have been damaged in. In some communities, I know there's been houses that have been damaged and some houses that have not been damaged. Mm. And it's the same sort of in every community. So it's kind of like, you and your luck type thing. Like, you don't know, you can't say, oh, this whole area has been damaged. It's a bit different than other places, where if you live in a country where there's a lot of rainfall, you always know that these particular areas, these particular roads will always have issues. So it's a bit messy.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's all getting sorted soon. Yeah. I think the government's definitely stepped up to the challenge. I even managed to make it to Dubai over the weekend to go to the White Festival to see Black Coffee, which was lots of fun. And still Dubai being Dubai, bouncing back, people still wanting to be out. The traffic was there to support that. So I think, people are definitely desperate to just kind of enjoy the last bits of the winter. Well, spring, is it spring now? We've got left.
Definitely spring. Yeah. Well into spring. Yeah. Spring has sprung.
Spring has sprung. Yeah, I think you're right. People just want to get on with it. And it's not like, there's gallery openings, exhibition openings happening this week. People are still going to the mall and shopping. People are still going out. So they kind of just want to get things moving and move on.
I think last week there was a bit of a kind of don't go out unless you have to mentality, which I completely was on board with, because listen, if it involves me not leaving the house, I'm thrilled. But the now it is definitely a case of people trying to listen. If you're navigating some big puddles, big lakes, just kind of planning the journeys and maybe taking into account that it's maybe going to take a little bit longer. But we're getting there. We're definitely getting there.
But you know what's the nicest thing about this that's happened? Like I was saying, making a joke that I've been getting lots of messages from people. And it's nice because I actually thought, wait, I haven't spoken to this person in a couple of months and they're checking if my house is okay. Like that's been nice. I've been hearing that from a lot of people. They've been hearing from their work colleagues or like people that they've worked with before, or people they haven't spoken to in a while, just checking to see if they're okay, which is that sense of community, I think, in Dubai and in the UAE in general is really nice.
People have been doing as much as they can to try and make sure that, but we've seen a group of restaurants that were giving meals to people last week. If they'd lost significant things in the floods, and just kind of going down and making sure that they've got food and places to go, and then hotel groups that are offering people places to stay. So there's definitely, I think it's Rove Hotels are offering discounts for people, and then the Katopi group, which has some burger places and taco places last week, were making sure that people had food. So there is definitely a kind of great community, which is, that always comes through here.
Yeah, it does. I think it's also really important to mention this is not cloud seeding. So everybody who's been thinking it, it's just not. We did our research here at The National. We spoke to a lot of experts. So there's nothing we can do about it. We just got to get on with it now.
Yeah.
Did you think it was cloud seeding?
Me? No, I didn't think. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about cloud seeding, but I didn't think it was. The only thing I know is that cloud seeding doesn't create lightning, from what I understand. And there was lightning here. Because if you could create lightning, you would have the power in your hands, right? Electricity.
Wait, Zeus.
Yeah, like Zeus.
Okay, so on our list today, you're here, your first podcast, where you're here for the whole run now. We've brought you in. It's no longer Man About Town. It's Man Is Here.
Man Is Here. I'm here to annoy you and pester and talk about stuff and interrupt you guys, so... Hi and sorry in advance.
I love it. I'm here for it. So we're going to go on to the Venice Biennale.
Yes.
Explain to us, what is this?
So a lot of, you may have heard about the Venice Biennale in the past or heard the term, but a lot of people just don't know the details of it. So it's one of the oldest cultural festivals in the world. I think it launched in 1895 or 94. So it's pretty prestigious. It's running from April until November. It's happening in Venice, in Italy, and it's basically a big festival of that showcases contemporary art, architecture, cinema, dance, theater from all around the world. It's almost, if you think about it, like Expo in a way, where different countries have a pavilion and they're representing the best art or the artist that represents their country, along with other galleries doing things. People call it the Olympics of the art world, but I like refer to it more as like the September issue of the art world. You know, it's like, it's where all the global trends kind of start or begin, or if you're an emerging artist and you have an exhibition at Venice, like people will know who you are. Or if you're like a celebrated artist, they will have like a big exhibition about you there. It's kind of the thing that makes people's, makes artists' careers, or it cements it. So it's a really cool, social, fun thing. Like I said, it lasts for a long time, like from April all the way until November, April 20th to November 24th. And this year is the 60th Venice Biennale, because it happens once every 2 years. It doesn't happen every single year.
Biennale that kind of kicked off all the Biennales, like, because we've lost, there's now in Riyadh. So this is the OG Biennale.
This is the mother Biennale. The ultimate Biennale that began it all.
And it's a big year this year.
It's a big year because 60th is a big deal. And they have a really cool theme this year, which is foreigners everywhere. And it's basically focusing on artists that are foreigners, migrants, expats, people who live in diaspora, refugees, and other people who are like considered outsiders or live in the margins, and focusing on artists from those communities or work about those communities and highlighting it. Now, I just want to say, aside from the pavilions of each country, the Biennale is split into two sections. They have Italian names that I'm going to attempt to pronounce. One is called the Nucleo Contemporaneo, which basically means contemporary art. So it's all artists like right now, creating work right now. And the other one is the Nucleo Storico, which is basically any historically significant artist from the past. So
I never would have guessed that from those names. Contemporary. Really? No, I'm joking.
Nucleus. Oh, okay. Yeah, gullible. So there's kind of something for everyone. Like if you're more into like modernist or historical art, then you can see that. But if you want to like cool conceptual contemporary stuff, you can see that. But what's really cool is that there are 331 artists who will be at the Biennale exhibiting work. And of these, there are over 40 Arab artists. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those are, like I said, artists in diaspora or immigrants, and they're represented by different galleries. But there are six Arab pavilions, which will be at the Biennale. Five of them are showing like solo exhibitions, so one artist, and then one is a group show. It's really cool. It's really exciting because, yeah, it's just, I mean, if you think about Art Dubai in a much bigger scale, right?
Yeah.
It's just a cool way to learn about artists from other countries that you maybe have never visited or never been. So the fact that the region has six pavilions from the Arab world that are very diverse and from each other is like a really great representation for this region in, you know, one of the biggest, most international art festivals.
And it's like all different events. Like that's what I loved about Art Dubai as well. We saw dance. This has got the same, right? Cinema, yeah. Dance, music, theater,
performance.
And the Arab countries, there are six states, yeah. Right? So, and the UAE is one.
So I'll go through briefly and tell you about the countries and like a little bit about the artist. And what they work, and you'll just see how diverse it all is. So from the UAE, there is a solo exhibition for Abdullah Al-Saadi. Now, he's a very renowned, influential Emirati artist, is like one of the first sort of conceptual artists in the UAE that was doing like really interesting work that he takes things from nature. So, for example, in one of his older works, he got these massive rocks from the desert, and then on them glued on, you know, the thing that you, when you're wearing slippers or sandals, the bit,
yeah,
the straps. So he put the straps over the, so imagine like a sandal, but it's made of rock and the top is the plastic with the thing on top. So it was all about this idea of identity and walking through the desert. So his work is really about looking at nature and the environment and what that says about humanity and people in the UAE landscape through the environment, so which is very cool.
That's super cool.
Yeah, and then there's Wael Shawki from Egypt, and on Instagram, his pavilion or his show is the one that has the longest line that I've seen. There's people literally standing around the block, like, yeah, which is very cool, like waiting to go in. And he's a very interesting multimedia artist, and his exhibition is called Drama 1882, And he's one of these artists that does a lot of research. And he focused on this revolution that happened in Egypt between 1879 and 1882 as a starting point. And then he's created all of this work from there. Sculptural photography, performance. He's very known for creating performance pieces that have like elements of like a play in them. So it's a very multimedia exhibition that focuses on this historical event that happened from a contemporary perspective. So that's very exciting. And then from Lebanon, we have Munira Al-Soh, who is using mythology to talk about, she does painting and embroidery, and she's looking at mythology, Phoenician mythology, to create these narratives about contemporary challenges that women face. So she's also looking at the past and the present and combining it through her work. And then from Saudi, we have Manal Al-Dawian, who is an amazing artist, and she's also focusing on women's stories. She did this whole, the exhibition is called Shifting Sands, A Battle Song. And she's exploring the evolving role of women in Saudi Arabia. And that's how that's changed over the past like couple of decades. And part of her research was gathering all these Saudi women in Saudi Arabia and having these big discussions with them and singing with them. And she's using all of that to create work at the Biennale. So it could be sculpture, it could be performance, it could be video. She's also a very interesting multimedia artist.
Yeah. That's fascinating. I think like, you know, I just think back to my childhood and what Saudi and the image of Saudi was when I was a kid. And even in my teenage years, like what I imagined when I thought of Saudi Arabia. And that has just flipped, hasn't it? So much in the last 10 years. Like it's a completely different country in so many respects. It's such an interesting place at the moment. So I'm really excited by anything that's coming out of Saudi Arabia, but especially like retelling women's story, because I think for a long time, people just, you know, I mean, I think there was often a Western perception of what Arab women were. But yeah, it's really nice to be able to see that like women like Manal are taking those voices and putting them into, you know, a global community, which is the Venice Biennale. It's great stuff.
I was just going to say, like, that's why the Biennale is cool, because it's also kind of capturing a moment in time of what was happening in a particular country, in a particular culture. Like in 10 years from now or 15 years from now, we can look back at like 2024. Oh, this was like a pivotal moment in Saudi history. And like, this was what was being examined and being represented at the Biennale back at that time. You know, this is why I kind of like art festivals as a time capsule almost of what was happening.
Oh, well, what you've just said is an even better seg. Because I was going to say, we can't not talk about the Israeli pavilion. Have you guys read about it?
So yeah, there I saw was, a headline.
I haven't read anything.
So there was due to be an Israeli pavilion, exactly kind of what Manj just described, kind of art installation like that is representative of the country. Everything was due to open last week. And then the artist has pulled out, put up signs on the outside of the space where the exhibition was due to be held that read, "The artists and the curators of the Israeli pavilion will open the exhibition when a ceasefire and hostage release agreement is reached." So it's the kind of, the art has kind of been held back in like a very, very high profile way, in very, very high profile space, to kind of make this really, really significant statement. The artist is Ruth Patir, an Israeli artist who's spoken to the New York Times about the statement that she's making. And she says she hates it, but she thinks it's important. This is so much bigger than me, is what she's kind of said about the statement that she's making by withdrawing the art from, or potentially temporarily or long-term, withdrawing the art from the Biennale.
That's so interesting, isn't it? How it's become like a political space. But I suppose art is
so political.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, even her doing that is an art statement in itself. You know what I mean? People will talk about her, you know, posting these signs is a political, it's an artistic statement. It's using this platform as well to remind everyone.
Like, we don't know if that wasn't kind of part of her plan the whole time. Like, was... Mm-hmm. I'm sure there was art ready to go and like a kind of piece there, but the kind of, there is the potential that this was always going to be a statement, and but or it could have been like a last minute decision to kind of pull the piece, but the decision does cut it. There was a there was a kind of movement and an online letter signed by more than 20,000 artists and cultural personalities, kind of calling for the exclusion of the pavilion from the fair. So that was kind of a conversation.
Even if it was a stunt, I love a stunt like this that has meaning, as opposed to, you know, I don't know if you guys remember at Miami a couple of years ago where the guy just put a banana on the wall. You know, like, this makes a bit more sense and I can get behind this, like the banana, like, okay, interesting. But, you know,
it's yeah, this doesn't scream stunt. It says like statement.
Exactly. Yes. From stunt to statement. I love that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take that. That could be a headline somewhere. Write it. Oh, wait, we're writers.
Man will have a story tomorrow from stunts to statements. We'll make it happen.
I just want to mention one more thing before we move on from the Venice Biennale is Aman's participation in the Biennale. Is Raz, one of our writers, wrote interviewed the artist. So it's the only group exhibition from the Arab pavilions, and it's called Melef Haven. And it's Oman highlighting the work of four Omani artists who are responsible for stimulating and like revitalizing the Omani art scene. And so, which is very cool. Like, we don't hear that much about what's happening in Oman in terms from the art scene. So I was really excited to see that they were not only things happening in Oman, but these four artists whose names are Ali Al-Jabri, Isa Al-Mufra'i, Sara Al-Ulaqi, and Adham Al-Farsi, are their work and their group exhibition is being taken to Biennale. So I just think that's really cool. It's the only group exhibition from the Arabs, and it's these artists who are right now being innovators in Oman, which is very cool.
The work on show isn't just limited to the country's pavilions. There are group shows and different galleries that go and take amazing work from the countries that they're from, kind of like similar to like the Art of Dubai kind of vibe.
Yes.
And so then there's like, I think you said this number already, man, but 40 more than 40 artists from the Arab world. And that, so obviously we have like UAE, Egypt, Lebanon included in what we've just discussed, but there's also Iraqi artists, Palestinian artists, Sudanese artists all showing at the event. So it's like, it is an incredible representation from this part of the world.
So can we get to Venice then, guys?
Yeah, shall we go to Venice?
Like, this is, I feel like we're selling it so hard and I haven't got a ticket.
I mean, it's running until November. So anyone, like basically for like half of the year, it's not a flash in the pan. For half of the year, you've got an opportunity to go and kind of see this artwork from around the world. So it does kind of really allow for art appreciators to kind of be there and take it in. It doesn't just have to be, it's not just 4 days in Venice.
Yeah. And another great title for an unnamed novel yet, 4 Days in Venice.
Listen, I'll start writing them eventually.
You're just coming out with these, Farah. Yeah.
This is my problem, man. I can do the headlines, but I've never followed through with the actual novels.
Just get enough headlines and, you know, maybe it'll just be a novel of titles.
The week that I'm not here, you'll be like, that's the week that her novel happened.
I was going to say, we also have like, because it's going on for so long, we'll probably, if there's breaking stories, interesting stories, we're going to be reporting on them in the national newspaper, on our Instagram, or here. So this is not the first and last time we speak about Venice. Yeah.
Venice will come up again. It'll follow us for the rest of the year.
Have either of you been to Venice?
I've not.
You've never been to Venice?
Have you?
No. I've been twice.
Oh, okay.
My mum loved Venice as a child, so she often wanted to go there on holiday. It's a very romantic city, but as a teenager, not so much. Like, just as a young teenager, like 14 years old, just strolling around Venice. I was like,
not up for the gondolas as a teenager.
And it's just when, you know, like a bit huffy and puffy as a teenager, I think that's what I was like going around Venice. Although I did have a camera and I did take some good photos. Yes, I was that teenager.
Are there any good films set in Venice? Like, good? I feel like it's a rom-com kind of vibe.
I mean,
like,
only last week, I watched A Haunting in Venice, the new Kenneth Branagh Agatha Christie, but I'm not sure that we're going to call that top-tier art. But it's great.
Well, the new Ripley, there's a whole section of that is shot in Venice.
That is top-tier art.
That is definitely top-tier art. I definitely recommend that still.
I need to watch that, yeah.
Two ends of the spectrum there from us both. Although the Kenneth Branagh Agatha Christie's, I've got a lot of time for. I'm really enjoying them.
Anything Agatha Christie, I enjoy.
That's good. They're good films.
So I suppose, like, now that's a good segue then, Farah. Farah, what else are you enjoying at the moment?
Oh, on the topic of top tier art, yeah, I can talk top tier art. Obviously, it's been a big week for my community.
Don't hold back.
We have a new album from Taylor Swift. Listen, it's been big.
How did you react? Did you guys know this was happening? Was this like announced or was it a shock?
Yeah, this is what confuses me.
Oh,
yeah.
Inas. It's like you have never been on a podcast with me talking about Taylor Swift. Yes, this was announced. She announced it at the Grammys when she was wearing her black and white dress.
Yeah, she did. I remember, yeah.
I'm going to just Google now the black and white dress. I can't remember what she looked like.
But did you know there was going to be 31 tracks on it?
No. Mm. All we knew about 16 songs. So we knew about one album. We also knew that she had lots of special editions. So there were like 4 extra songs that were going to be released on different albums, like the Black Dog edition, the Bolter edition, Albatross, and maybe the Manuscript. So they're the special editions. So those songs were kind of like extra songs that people knew were going to come. She loves dropping an extra song. The woman seems to be prolific. She cannot stop writing music. Does she maybe need to take a break? I think so, but we'll come to that in a second. And then obviously Friday morning came around. The album was released at midnight Eastern time, which is 8 a.m. our time. So that's a very sociable time for an album to be released, for us writing about it and listening to it. But I had a very busy day doing my actual job on Friday, so I stopped myself from listening to it until I finished work. And then by then the double album had dropped and everyone was like, oh my god, 31 songs. It's a lot of music to try and get your head around.
31 songs is a lot of music. So I actually put it on today when I was in the rock drive to school, the girls.
So you must have had like 3 songs.
I basically had like 3 songs. And I had to skip a few because there's some bad language there, parents.
She swears. Yeah, she does swear.
Yeah. So I had to skip a few.
Just remind us the name of the album. Is it, I don't want to get it wrong, Tortured Poet, something?
The Tortured Poets Department.
Okay. And it's her, what album, 11th, 12th?
Yeah. 11th.
Wow.
11th, just straight new album. She's re-recorded 4 of her original 6 that were bought. So if we count them, then she's recorded 15 albums and she's 35. She's too young to be this prolific and this busy and this accomplished.
I think it's incredible.
Oh, it's amazing.
Can you give us like a general vibe of the album?
Okay, thank you so much for asking, man. So I'm going to do like preconception. What do we know about Taylor Swift in the last year or so? She has been absolutely crushing it. She's been on top of her game. She has become a billionaire based purely on her music, like no other entrepreneurial sidelines. She has like contributed to like the American economy with her tour that has like actually boosted parts of the American economy, which is incredible. And she's on this seemingly unstoppable world tour, which I'm going to see in June. So when you don't hear from me for a while, that's because I'm in heaven. And so she's had, there's like been highs, but in her personal life, there have been lows. She separated from her partner of 6 years, she drew Alwyn, and so there's been other things going on. But so people were kind, and like Tortured Poets Department, right, like we got that as an album title. All of the artwork is black and white, it's very wistful. We were expecting something very heartbreaky,
mm-hmm.
and people were also expecting it to be very specifically about Joe Alwyn. Is that what we got? Not 100%. No, it's a lot more synthy, it's a lot more upbeat, kind of poppy, but the lyric, it's like, it's very confusing because like the lyrics are like heart-wrenchingly sad, but then like the beat is like, oh, let's keep going.
It's an oxymoron. Artists always do though. I thought that was like normal.
Yeah, so I was expecting, so she made these 2 kind of like folk style albums during lockdown, Evermore and Folklore. I was expecting something along that vibe, and that's definitely not what we got something very poppy. And there are some songs that like actually do feel like obviously they're never going to be played in like actual clubs, but they have like that kind of like direction that they could be going in.
I'm just loving the fact that obviously there are the songs, the overall music and vibe. And then there are the Swifties, and I'm sure you're one of them, that's actually going through this like it's Morse code to her life.
Right. Obviously, yeah. I think people need to calm down. Like, it isn't, like, we aren't reading Taylor Swift's diary to, like, know when she last saw her ex-boyfriend. And, like, these aren't, like, this isn't just, like, a news story about, like, gossip. Like, people are, like, literally reading the lyrics and being like, right, well, this is what happened then. It's like, no, there can be some creative license. Like, this is not, like, a direct statement about what this one man did.
But people love that, though, don't they? I mean, the rumor mill, just as soon as she dropped, and she doesn't, you know, she hasn't left anything out. She's dropped 30 songs. Yeah. And I mean, I just looked at, is it Thank You, Amy? That was the one song I listened to without the children in the car, because there's definite swearing in that. And everybody's speculating it's all about Kim.
So that's of Taylor's own making, because.
Okay, so we believe this rumor.
No, it's not necessarily we believe the rumor, but it's like Taylor's created this rumor because, yes, the song's called Thank You, Amy. Old school Taylor Swift used to do a thing where in like, you know, in like album books and you get all the lyrics. Taylor used to go in like her original, like up until like in 1989, I think it was. The lyrics would all be written out in lowercase, but she would put capital letters in random words. And then that would be like the message of the song. She'd literally spell it out. And that's what she's done with Thank You, Amy, because she's the whole song title is lowercase, apart from the letters K, I, and M in Thank You, Amy, in like the song title. So Taylor handed us the word Kim. And it's a song about an argument. It's definitely a song about beef. So that doesn't take...
It's a song almost about bullying, though, as well. It's a song about someone feeling really upset with somebody.
And, like, we know parts of what was played out publicly, which they did, like the Taylor and Kim, like Kim releasing audio footage of parts of what Taylor has said, like the very curated feud there. Who knows what was, like, what was real, what wasn't.
I definitely went on a Google hunt yesterday because I was like, what happened with Kim and Taylor? And there's this like really old photo.
Probably if you didn't phone me, because I would have been able to give you quite a passionate rundown about this and quite balanced, because before my job at the National, I was an entertainment journalist who obviously this was my beat.
This is your beat, yeah.
It's like where like the whole like I have the receipts comes from in like cultural. Like obviously that was the same, but it's become like very culturally significant because Kim kept on saying she had the receipts from Taylor. She had the receipts from Taylor and like, but yeah.
She didn't though.
And whole snake thing, snake gate. She released the audio on International Snake Day or something.
And now Taylor fans just comment snake, 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 snake on everything Kim does. Have I ever commented a single snake? No, because I'm not that person. But am
you're also not 15.
Nine, the year of the snake, yes. But you know who else was? Taylor Swift. So.
But did you know that Kim's lost 100,000 followers over the last 24 hours, apparently, since this whole thing?
The impact, like this, the digital impact of Taylor Swift is wild.
It is. It's crazy.
Have you seen there's like, so in that, in one song, I think it is in Tortured Poets, the song, there's a lyric that we declared Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist. And like his follower numbers have just skyrocketed. I would love to have been there when they, like Charlie Puth heard that for the first time being like, what is this?
Yeah. Who is he? Who is he? Have you researched him? Come on, Farah, you definitely have.
No, he's a singer. You've heard of him. He's not huge. He should be a bigger artist, says Taylor. But
I've heard of the name, but I can't probably. But I wanted to ask you, Farah, actually, since you know all the albums so well, like, where do you think this fits, like, this album? Like, where do you think it fits in? Like, do you think it's her best work so far? Or do you think it's an evolving work? Or, like, because there's a lot of discussion about that online.
It's so subjective. Listen to man. I feel like I'm being interviewed by him. This Sorry. Is wonderful. Just getting a taste of what it is
so
to be.
Well, I'm actually curious.
I'm getting a taste of what it is to be an artist in the UAE being interviewed by a man. It's a very subjective question. In the National's ranking of all 11 of her albums done by Saeed Saeed, our music journalist, he put it in at number 7, which I think is maybe fair. I like it maybe a bit more, but that's me. I like the Easter eggs in the album. I do like that she's definitely put things in that like fans know are stories. I think people need to not take it too seriously, but I do like the kind of bits to pull apart. She was dating an English singer called Matty Healy. I find it incredibly uncomfortable calling a grown man Matty, but here we are. from the 1975. We all know who that is, right?
Yeah.
I wanted like a heartbreaking just album to sit in the corner and cry to. Like, I needed something that was going to be my, oh, I need to cry today, I'm going to put this on. But I guess I just still have Adele for that. Is it 21 that's Adele's, like?
Yeah.
So I just, I've still got 21. I don't have Tortured Poets for that. A lot more of it is about Matty Healy than I was expecting.
Interesting.
I really like the kind of folklore, more whimsical, folky style of Taylor. But then I also do like super pop, like 1989. So we I've got complexities in this. But it's not my favorite, but I like it.
Maybe it's going to grow on you as well, though. I find that sometimes with new albums. I read a rumor that, and I don't know, maybe the Faro, you might have already heard this, but the Black Dog Pub from South London has been mentioned in this album. Is that true?
Yeah, it's in Vauxhall, right?
Yeah, I used to go there all the time. I was like, what? Can I bump into Taylor?
The link there is that her ex, Joe Alwyn, might have gone to that pub after they broke up. So that's a whole album. That's a whole song about like when you break up with someone and you don't know where they are and you're kind of like feeling a bit at a loss of where they like, but that pub must be feeling some good traffic this week.
Yeah, they do a great roast. I mean, it's very generic though. It's not like, you know, like when you see like in England, there's lots of different pubs and people go to pubs all the time, and it's not necessarily just a drink. It's often to eat and there's social spaces. Okay, but it's not that interesting, that pub. It's quite generic. It's in a really handy location for where I used to go to university. So
when, without being like that, like culture snob, you know, so she has a song on her album Lover called London Boy, which is about Joe Alwyn, her ex-boyfriend who's from London. And in that song, she like lists all like the places that she goes out in London. But it's like in that, she doesn't show herself to be like particularly sophisticated about her London night out taste. She's like, she goes out in Camden, she goes to Bond Street, she goes for a night out in Shoreditch, and everyone's like, okay, well, yeah, you've listed like top level. She didn't really her music dig much deeper into London's cultural scene.
But like, can she go anywhere?
I mean, did we know that she spent like 4 years living in London, like low-key? So she must have been able to. She has a favorite kebab shop in Camden. They've got photos of her on the wall.
Why didn't she mention that?
That's the image.
Yes, I agree with man. I think if she'd led with the kebab shop in Camden, it must have been Woody Fire.
Very relatable.
So I was going to ask you guys your top 5 tracks, but I'm 100% sure that you haven't got them.
No, I haven't listened to the whole thing. I was just really fascinated by the Thank You Amy song, just because it was obviously everywhere. But then I actually like the song, and I think it's
a good song.
Aside from the Kim Kardashian of it all, I'm like, oh, this is a very nice, cool song, cool lyrics. I just I'm excited. I know this is a weird thing, but I'm really excited to see how people will take these songs and cover them, because she's such an amazing. Who was it? Somebody did that to one of her albums. The guy from
Ryan Adams.
Oh, Bryan Adams.
Ryan.
Like, oh, Ryan Adams. Who's that? Why do I know
that? An American singer.
Oh, okay. And he sung them differently. And I was like, oh, like it makes you reminds you of what a great lyricist, is that the right word, she is, yeah. Right, and what a great writer she is. And I think when you do that, you also realize, oh, these lyrics are timeless, these stories are timeless. I'm like interested in that aspect. I'm interested in the legacy of Taylor as she's creating it, you know. But you know, one thing I'll say as well, like, I'm so fascinated by her, like, how she creates these communities and how people are like, it's like all these Swifties think of her like, it's different to Beyonce, right? Where Beyonce is like, she's a queen, we can't get near her. But Swiftie, you're like in for the ride. And I like that. Like, I think that's more difficult to do as an artist, where like people are with you and they're really emotionally invested in you. I think that's really fascinating.
That's really cool.
Yeah, like the kind of parts of her cultural impact are like so interesting. I like the kind of like fact that she's got, like I said about Charlie Puth, like his like Instagram followers like shooting up and Kim Kardashian's plummeting. And then just like, if you like, obviously it's like, it's marketing, so like every brand's getting on board with it. But there are like, so you know how like dictionaries on social media will have like their word of the week, and so all the dictionaries have like this week, not all of them, but quite a few of them have kind of chosen like slightly left field words that feature on the album, because she's known for kind of using quite whimsical oldie worldy words in her lyrics. And so yeah, there's the kind of like cultural breakdowns of what Taylor's doing. So it's, yeah, she's interesting. And I mean, I will be a scholar, I will study, I will continue to
I'll write a thesis.
I love that. Well, I think that's it then. I think that's all we have time for today. So thank you so much for listening to us despite our mad surroundings.
Hopefully we sound okay. If you like this episode, please follow and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app.
And don't forget to tell your friends and family about it. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram.
Bye. Bye.